Tonight, Good President Wenceslas, read by William Gaminara.
Good President Wenceslas was much appreciated by his people, who, being Eastern European, had suffered a great deal. What with the Soviet Union having effectively occupied their country for so many years, and with the painful process of adjusting to a free market economy. President Wenceslas had managed to protect them from some of the chilliest of the winds, but his hands, like the hands of all politicians, at least those in power, were tied by the harsh realities of economics. His country had to modernize. Ancient, ill-designed factories had to be stripped down and rebuilt. Decaying public housing, damp and unheated, with permanently malfunctioning lifts, had to be gutted and rebuilt. Classrooms had to be expanded, roads patched, and civic life, weakened by complacency, fear and time-serving, had to be rediscovered and rehabilitated. All of this took time and money, of which there never seemed to be enough. The outside world had been encouraging, but had been slow to provide the economic support that would enable the economy to get going. Other countries had their problems, and while they might be ready to give advice, when it came to backing that advice with investment, they tended to discover that their own budgets were somewhat more pressed than anticipated, and they could not find quite as much money as they had hoped. The government's economists did their best. They gathered economic data, they analysed it, and then tried to see how they might use their analysis to design a recovery programme. But nothing seemed to have the desired effect. There remained a high level of unemployment and a recalcitrant public funding deficit, with both of which nobody seemed capable of dealing. There was real hardship, particularly amongst those who'd retired after years of service to the state. Their pensions were shrinking in value, and they often found themselves at the end of the month having to deny themselves food or heating until the next pitiful payment reached them. They complained, but nobody seemed to listen to them. "Everybody has it hard," said one newspaper editorial. "It's not just retired civil servants, it's everybody. The world is changing, and the only way forward is to go along with that change and make the most of it." This advice was not appreciated. It was hard to embrace poverty. It was hard to be enthusiastic about hunger. It was hard to be cheerful about not having enough money to buy medicine, or coal, or washing powder. Yet somehow people managed to get by, especially if they had families who were able to help them out. Those who were by themselves, though, were not so fortunate, and that was where the worst suffering occurred. President Wenceslas himself led a simple life, noted for its frugality. Although he was obliged to live in an official residence, a 17th-century castle, a short distance from the capital, he eschewed governmental extravagance in any form. He used public transport whenever possible, ate his lunch in the parliamentary canteen, helped his wife to do the shopping in the local supermarket. He always looked for the best bargain, the items that came with discount coupons for other products, the 10% free offers, the things that were markedly cheaper if bought in quantities of 20 or more. As befitted a popular, accessible president, he was often to be seen cycling around the capital, followed by several police guards, also mounted somewhat sheepishly on bicycles. The police had initially tried to escort him with motorcycle outriders, but Wenceslas had quickly put a stop to this. "I am an elected president," he protested to the chief of police. "There is no need for me to cut myself off from the people I serve, nor do I need hundreds of policemen to guard me from the occasional person who might wish to ask me a question." The police chief stared at him with incredulity. "Even from difficult people?" he asked. "Even from reactionaries? Even from visionaries, revolutionaries, irredentists, obsessives? Even from people like that?"
"Even from them," said President Wenceslas.
They all have something to offer, even if they are misguided. The chief of police shook his head. That was not how presidents were meant to speak. And as far as he was concerned, from the perspective of security, misguided people were best arrested and locked up for as long as possible. That stood to reason, he felt. Not surprisingly, the people approved of this presidential modesty and openness, and he was highly regarded, even by his political opponents. "Wenceslas is good," was the most common comment made about him. It was the Feast of Stephen. The weather had been harsh. A billowing body of freezing polar air had drifted down from northern Sweden and Finland, resulting in heavy snowstorms throughout the country. The snow now lay all about, deep and crisp and even. President Wenceslas had been in his office, working on the gay marriage bill that his government was introducing. It was difficult work politically, as it was hotly contested, and President Wenceslas, for all that he was a politician, did not like political or social conflict. He wanted people to be happy, and he could not understand why anybody should desire otherwise. The problem, though, was different visions of the good. He understood that, of course. Drafting legislation always gave President Wenceslas a headache, and the legislation he'd been working on that afternoon had been particularly problematic. Looking at his watch, he realised that he'd been at his desk for a full 8 hours at a stretch. He was now more than ready to get home to his wife. When the time came to leave the office, one of his aides suggested that he might travel back to the presidential residence by car, given that it was so cold. But he had refused. "Other people have to take the train," he said, "so why shouldn't I? Besides, I can work on the train. If I try to read in the car, I find that I feel a bit nauseous. It's something to do with the movement." "As you wish," said the aide. "Let me carry your bag, sir."
"I'm perfectly capable of carrying it myself," said President Wenceslas.
But then, immediately regretting his tetchiness, he apologised.
"I'm sorry," he said. "I'm a bit tired. Please forgive me."
They walked down to the station and boarded the train. The aide seated himself next to President Wenceslas, and a plainclothes policeman took his place in the seat immediately behind them. The train drew out of the station. It was 4 o'clock and already getting dark.
"Aren't winter evenings wonderful?" said President Wenceslas. "An evening by the fire, something tasty on the table, a hot bath, and then bed. I love all that."
"I like going for a walk through the snow," said the aide, "and then coming back to a glass of mulled wine."
"Oh, I love that too," said President Wenceslas.
The train crawled out through the edges of the town, stopping every few minutes at a small suburban station. There were very few people about. One or two alighted at these stops, but nobody boarded the train. President Wenceslas was now silent, staring out through the train window. He was thinking of the impending finance bill. He knew that there would be more suffering, and he hated the thought of it. But they had to control the deficit somehow, or the Germans would start breathing down their necks. He sighed. The train stopped at a small, rather scruffy station, the last one before their own stop. He looked out onto the platform. There was a man standing beside one of the litter bins into which passengers tossed their newspapers, the wrappings of the snacks they'd bought at the station cafe, their empty waxed cardboard coffee cups. President Wenceslas watched the man as he bent down and started to rummage in the bin, looking for anything of value, for any scraps of discarded food. The train started to move very slowly down the platform.
"That man," said President Wenceslas to his aide. "Who is he? Where do you think he lives?"
The aide used his sleeve to wipe the window clear of condensation.
"Oh, he's often there. I've seen him before. I ride my bike past his place at weekends. It's a bit of a hovel, I'm afraid.
It's over by the mountain, right beside the forest fence. Do you know St. Agnes's Fountain? It's near there. I've chatted with him a few times.
Is he in work?
The aide shook his head. No, he was, but no longer. He had a job in a factory that made padlocks. Production shifted to China. President Wenceslas was silent. Then he turned to the aide and said, I'd like us to get down there this evening. Will your wife mind if you're late? Not at all, said the aide. I'll call her and warn her. Once they reached the official residence, President Wenceslas supervised the loading of the car with gifts. Then they set off, with the plainclothes policeman at the wheel and President Wenceslas and the aide in the back. Brightly shone the moon that night, though the frost was cruel. He'll be terribly pleased, said the aide, and pretty surprised, I imagine. He was right. As President Wenceslas and his aide entered the rickety hovel, the poor man stood up, his eyes wide with astonishment. A case of Brunello di Montalcino, said President Wenceslas. It was given to me by the Italian ambassador, along with these three salamis. They're pretty tasty, I'm told.
You're too kind, stuttered the man.
And chocolate, said President Wenceslas. And this fruitcake, there's a lot of rum in it, my wife informs me. She made it herself. The poor man stared at the largesse. Then he cleared his throat.
I didn't vote for you, you know.
President Wenceslas had not been prepared for this, and it took him a few moments to recover his composure. But that's got nothing to do with it, he protested. Nothing at all.
Really?
Said the man. Yes, really. The man looked thoughtful.
Well, in that case, I shall, he said.
Shall what?
Vote for you. Next time.
President Wenceslas and the aide started their journey home. Neither said anything. I was merely doing my duty, remarked President Wenceslas. That's all. I wasn't after any votes.
I know you weren't, sir, said the aide.
Tell me, said President Wenceslas, is it old-fashioned to say what I've just said?
What, about doing your duty?
Perhaps a bit uncool, said the aide, but...
But what?
But it was a wonderful thing to do, sir. A wonderful thing. In fact... The aide paused. In fact, it makes me want to burst into song.
President Wenceslas looked out of the window. The moon had risen higher, suspended above the trees, so understanding of our messy lives, so forgiving, bathing the fields of snow in silver, a ghostly silver, almost white.
William Gaminara was reading Good President Wenceslas, a short story by Alexander McCall Smith. The producer was Kirstine Cameron. And if you've missed any of the other stories in the series, you can catch up with them via the iPlayer radio app. BBC News at 11 o'clock. The United Nations Security Council has passed a resolution demanding a halt to Israeli settlement building on occupied Palestinian land. The vote passed after an abstention by the United States, which usually vetoes such resolutions. The Israeli ambassador to the UN, Danny Danon, said this would not bring peace.
By voting yes in favour of this resolution, you have in fact voted no. You voted no to negotiations. You voted no to progress and a chance for better lives for Israelis and Palestinians. and you voted no to the possibility of peace.
The German Chancellor Angela Merkel has promised new security measures after the Tunisian man wanted for Monday's attack in Berlin was killed in Italy. Anis Amri fled Germany after a lorry was hijacked and driven into crowds at a Christmas market. 12 people were killed. Amri was shot dead by police in Milan early this morning. Two men have been found guilty of infiltrating aid convoys to Syria to smuggle money to militants. Syed Hawk, a former probation officer from Stoke-on-Trent, and Mashoud Mia from East London were convicted of funding terrorism. The US Coast Guard is coordinating efforts to locate an elderly British woman missing from the Queen Mary II ocean liner. The ship, operated by the UK-based Cunard Cruise Line, was on its way from the United States to St Martin in the Caribbean. It's now retracing its course to assist in the search. The American actress Carrie Fisher, who played Princess Leia in the Star Wars films, is in a critical condition after apparently suffering a heart attack. It's thought she fell ill on a flight from London to LA. The 60-year-old had been on tour promoting her latest book, The Princess Diarist. Football. Crystal Palace has appointed the former England coach Sam Allardyce as its new manager. He replaces Alan Pardew, who was sacked yesterday. He left the Premier League club 1 point above the relegation zone. BBC News.
He says he's Baron Munchausen.
Christmas Eve.
What will you give me for it?
A golden sovereign, more than fair rent.
True enough.
On BBC Radio 4.
Employment of children. He was absolutely horrified by it. He thought of writing an article, but in fact he wrote A Christmas Carol.
When I was a kid, acting was just a way into becoming famous.
I want to be the angel.
There's supposed to be two angels.
Discover more about our Christmas Eve.
I'm saying nothing till he pays.